my, the Heaviside Layer is a beautiful place, and I'm no longer afraid to die, Taylor.
And how it's about cats, Jemmy. And this is the Final Girl Files. Hey, Taylor.
Hey, Jemmy.
This isn't cat people.
No, it's not.
Yes, listeners, we've tricked you. We've deceived you. We've played the Joker's trick, as this is our April Fool's episode.
Yes. We watched something scarier than cat people.
We did. Far scarier than cat people.
Far scarier than cat people is this piece of cinema.
Here's the thing. I don't think you could talk to anyone who's seen this movie and not get the opinion that it's a horror movie. So it's allowed.
So we are allowed to do it, actually.
Yes, listeners, that's right. This week, we watched 2019's Cats, directed by Tom Hooper, starring Francesca Hayward, Robbie Fairchild, Laurie Davidson, Ian McKellen, Judi Dench, Jason Derulo, Idris Elba, Jennifer Hudson, Taylor Swift, and unfortunately, Rebel Wilson and James Corden, based on the Andrew Lloyd Webber musical of the same name, which is in turn based on T.S. Eliot's Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats.
We got you!
We got you. Ladies and gentlemen, we got them.
But mostly we got ourselves.
We did get ourselves. We put ourselves through this for you, listeners, so I hope you enjoy. And we will do an actual episode on cat people at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So
I
wanted to say something off the bat. I want to get something out of the way. I want to get two things out of the way.
Oh, God.
Number one, we are Cats fans. We like the stage musical.
We are 100% Cats fans.
We like the stage musical, so you are not going to get, like, what's a Jellicle Cat, or this movie has no plot, or anything like that from us. Like, we know what Cats is supposed to be, and we enjoy that. Number two, the people responsible for this movie being what it is are Tom Hooper and the studio. I am laying none of the blame at the feet of the animators, or the actors, or the dancers. Well, you know what, I'll lay some of the blame on Rebel Wilson and James Corden, if only because they decided to throw everyone under the bus and, like, go out of the Oscars dressed as cats and make fun of all the people who worked on this movie who had no idea what kind of monstrosity they were bringing into this world. I just want to get those two things out of the way.
Nothing else can proceed until we establish these two things above all else.
Exactly.
If you're sitting here thinking, like, oh, this is just going to be another, like, how did this get made ass thing, like, where people are like, oh, like, this is so stupid because this movie doesn't have a plot. It's just a bunch of people singing about themselves. Like, yeah, man, we're well past that.
We know. We like Cats. I have seen Cats, the stage musical, live at least 5 times. One of the last things.
The stage musical, the 1998 recording of the stage musical, immediately after finishing this movie because I needed something good to cleanse myself.
We'll get into your experience watching this movie this
time. Yeah, actually, we can get into that at a later point. Let's start with you, since I feel like yours will be a little easier. First of all, your cat's origin story. Second of all, your cat's 2019 origin story. Go.
You want both? Are you sure you want both? Because both is
long. I want both. I want rapid fire. Go.
Okay. I got into Cats when I was about 8 years old, like the stage musical Cats as an Entity. I was on vacation, and I bought a little Beanie Baby cat. And I was kind of bringing it around to my family, like, hey, what should I name my cat? Because I was an 8-year-old child. And my cousin was like, oh, you should name her Grisabella, like from Cats. And I asked the question that would forever shape the rest of my life, what's Cats? And she said,
oh,
Cats
indeed.
What is Cats? And I still don't have an answer, really. I say that with the utmost affection. And she was like, oh, it's a musical. I'll bring over the videotape that I have of it next time I babysit you. And she did. And I was changed as a person. I saw Cats the Musical at a very good age to see Cats the Musical because I was young enough to be like, oh yeah, these are people just doing what I do, pretending to be animals all the time because I was a little baby furry. But also, like, not old enough to... No, I was old enough for that, but not young enough to, like, not know what was going on, you know? So I kind of hit that sweet spot. And if anyone ever asks me why I'm gay, I'm just going to say I watched Cats when I was 8 years old. And that's the only reason I need.
That'll do it.
So, Cats 2019. I remember when the trailer for Cats 2019 dropped.
I feel like we vividly. All remember that day that the trailer came out.
We all remember that day, but I remember vividly. I was, again, ironically enough, in Maine on vacation with my family, and I was, like, packing up because I had to go home for some reason. I had to go home a day early, so I was just, like, getting all my stuff together, putting everything in my suitcase, you know. And I sat down in my bed, and I took out my phone to, like, just check it idly. And I looked at Twitter, and Twitter was going insane. There were shrieks of horror, gnashing of teeth, wailing all over my timeline. And I saw the phrase Cats trailer and I was like, oh no, what have they done? So I found the trailer and I watched it and I, like many others, was horrified. And I was like, oh no, what have they done? So somehow I managed to sleep that night. I don't know how. But I did, and I got up the next morning, and I was getting ready to go. You know, I went down to the lake to say goodbye to everybody because, you know, I was leaving. And I was stopped by my cousin, the same cousin that I just mentioned before who introduced me to Cats. She, like, takes my arm, and she's like, Jemmy, have you seen the Cats trailer? So we had to, like, sit down and talk, have, like, a 15-minute discussion about the Cats trailer and all of its horrors. And we concluded this by being like, yeah, but we're still going to go see it, though, right? And go see it we did. I saw this movie for the first time in a theater on Christmas Eve 2019.
Oh my god.
I went with Jamie, Jace, and Shelby. And oh god.
God love them.
God. We were sitting like in the back of the theater and unfortunately there was like a family there. So we came in and I was like, guys, we have to like try and be respectful for this family who's probably trying to just like go see a movie with their kids. But it was so hard because like all of that was happening on screen in front of us. And we're all up there like covering our mouths with our hands, like trying so hard to like be quiet and not, you know, scream. Oh God. And it's just, I mean, it did re-spark a Cat's hyperfixation in me. So I guess. But yeah. I had a very normal one watching it this time around, though. Like, as normal as you can be with Cats. Like, I just put it on my laptop and took notes. I have 7 pages of notes, which, listeners, I usually average at about, 3 or 4 pages of notes per movie. I have 7 pages of notes for this movie, so that should show you how all my opinions on it. That's my Cats story. Taylor?
Your Cats story, I feel like, leads directly into my Cats origin story, because you saw Cats 2019, immediately got, like, super back into Cats, like, you were, like, all in on Cats, and I was at a point in my life where I was under the assumption that Cats the musical was just not for me. I didn't have anything against it. I didn't really have any, you know, I didn't think it was bad. I just, like, would see bits of it, and I'd be like, no, this probably isn't something that I would enjoy. But, like, I was like, Jemmy's having a great time, and, like, good for her. And you came into my home, and you were in Cats mode, and you were fully prepared to be like, I'm turning off Cat's brain. Like, we're gonna like watch other movies while I am in your sacred home, while I'm in your good Christian home. And I said, I think I want to watch Cats.
No, what happened was like I was on my laptop, like looking through my folder of movies that I have on there or had. This is my old laptop before it died mid the Witch recording. And I was like scrolling through and I like had Cats on there. I was like jokingly like we could watch Cats, like very clearly like joking about it. And you were like, you know what? I kind of want to do that.
Yeah.
And I like multiple times before we watched it, I was like, okay, Taylor, like you can tell me if you don't like this and we can turn it off and you don't have to watch it. We can stop at any point because like, listen, Cats isn't for everyone. I am very aware of this. So I was fully prepared to just be like, you know, just tell me if you want to stop.
We got about 30 seconds into the overture.
A cat had not even appeared on stage.
Yeah, there were no cats. It was just music. And I just under my breath went, oh, I think this slaps actually.
And it does.
And it does. And from there on in, I was in Cats mode, like deep in it. And now I love Cats. And so
I converted her, listeners.
She did convert me. And so skip then to like a few months later. I'm still really into Cats. And
we're still really into cats. Thank you.
Jemmy finds, and I don't know if we can tell this story because it involves her doing illegal things.
It's fine. I very legally found and acquired a very legal copy of Cats from
Jemmy
another country.
Found a cam rip, and the first of the, but I had been avoiding Cats 2019 because I was afraid of it.
You were
and
smart.
So the first time I watched Cats 2019 was like hunched over my computer in my dorm room with like my roommate at the time and her boyfriend whom I hated, like cuddling like 10 feet from me.
That's the ideal way to watch it, I think.
And I was hunched over my computer watching a shitty cam rip of Cats, and we didn't even finish the movie because it was just... And I turned it off, and I... So this was the first time I've ever watched Cats 2019 beginning to end.
Oh my god. Yeah, hey Taylor, why don't you tell us about this go-around? Why don't you tell us about that?
So, listeners, I don't often partake in...
The devil's lettuce.
Yes. I was going to say really any like substances that mess with my brain, but it really like specifically, I have like a little pack of gummies that I got from like a smoke shop up the road from my house. And I bought it like 6 months ago and I've maybe done like 3 edibles in my life since I bought this thing. I'm still on the first package I ever bought of little edible gummies. And me and my sister were going to watch Cats for the podcast, as you know. And I said as a joke to her, I said, oh, wouldn't it be funny if we did edibles? And then immediately was like, no. No, that would be silly. That would be stupid.
It would be stupid, Taylor. Tell me what message you sent me at, let me check here. last night at 10:25 p.m. What does that message read?
I did the edibles.
Listeners, I want you to know how this looked from my perspective. Because, like, yesterday was kind of insane for
me. Let's, like, zoom out.
Yesterday was a little insane for me. Because I sat down and I, like, wrote with my friends for 9 hours. So I was already kind of insane from that. And I decided that I was going to go to the movies, like, to a late night movie. Because I wanted to go see X and Jace wanted to come with me. So... The credits roll on X, which is a very good movie, by the way. Highly recommended. Go see it. The credits roll. I look at my phone, and all I see, Discord notification, Taylor, I took the edible. I just started laughing. And I held it up, because Jace was with me, and he was like, why, like, what's so funny? Like, why are you laughing? And I just held out the phone to him with the message on it, and he was like, oh no.
Did he know that I was immediately going to watch Cats?
He did. I choked out. She watched Cats. Like, while I was laughing. Yeah, can I read through some of these messages that you sent me?
Oh, Demi, I was just going to ask if you could do a lovely little dramatic reading of some of the messages that I sent you, including some of the notes that I took that I then sent to you. Like, okay, just for context, there was a very clear break in my notes when the edible really started hitting me. And it was at that point that I just kind of stopped finishing sentences.
All right, I'm just going to read a few of these because we're 15 minutes in and we need to actually start talking about the movie.
I would prefer to keep not talking about the movie for as long as possible. This is a better experience for everyone, I think.
So Taylor sends me her first chunk of notes, one of which says, in all caps, when will movie over? Next note, cat pussy. Next note, cat is pussy. Next note, serving cat. Next note. This note sent me into a 5-minute laughing spree that lasted the entirety of memory and paused only to feature me choking out the phrases, I feel like the world is in widescreen and it's giving cat.
It was giving cat.
So this next section really intrigues me.
I'm sorry. That was such a good way to phrase that. Okay, go.
It says, this edible is hitting me hard. Then... I feel like and it cuts off. And the next one is, of course this happens now. Underneath it, dark universe font. Now, Taylor, can you please tell me what was happening?
So
I'm so curious.
Came up And it was, the credits to me looked like the Dark Universe font. So I just wrote Dark Universe font.
What were you going to say? I feel like
I don't even remember.
That's a good point. I probably shouldn't ask you to like remember.
I was so high.
All right, last note, and then we will actually get to talk about the movie. I have to say I like this whole Macavity subplot, including the staging of Macavity and characterizing Bombalurina as his Harley Quinn would. End of sentence. I think I've gotten to the point of my edible experience where I'm just fully like watching a different movie. I have imagined the better version of this so much that I'm starting to see that instead of the actual cutoff, and then simply naked Elba in all caps. Oh my god. Also, the last thing you said to me before we went to bed last night, and it was like 12:30 a.m. and I was like delirious, is I had to see you call old Deuteronomy a DILF. That broke my brain a little.
That was the point at which I was watching clips from 98 Cats to like to fix things. But I did see Ken Page as old Deuteronomy walk onto the stage, and I was like, oh no, he is a DILF. And so
we don't have time to unpack all that. Anyway, now famously, one of the things people will tell you about Cats is that it's
about cats.
That too, but also that it does not have a plot. However, I will make the argument, Cats does have a plot. It's just an incredibly simple plot. And to demonstrate my point, I will now turn the mic over to my good friend Monkustrap, who will sing the plot for you. Take it away, sir.
Jellicle cats meet once a year at the Jellicle Ball, where we all rejoice at the will soon appear and make what is known as the Jellicle Choice. When old Deuteronomy, just before dawn, through a silence you feel you could cut with a knife, announces the cat who can now be reborn and come back to a different Jellicle life. For waiting up there is the Heaviside Lair, full of wonders one Jellicle only will see. And Jellicles ask, because Jellicles dare, who will it be?
Who will it be?
And that's it. That's the plot. It's very simple. But it is a plot. Like, that's it. That's all you need to know about Cats. Now, in order to have a discussion about Cats 2019, I think it's very important that we first discuss a little film I like to call 2012's Les Miserables.
Must we?
Because Les Mis sets the stage for what Cats 2019 is going to become. Now, with Les Mis, director Tom Hooper fooled a nation into believing that he could direct musicals.
He didn't fool me for a goddamn second, first of all.
Listen, he did fool me, and I will say that. He did. He fooled me. He fooled the Academy.
Like, he fooled me when I was, like, 15.
It still counts. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, he fooled all of us into believing that he could direct musicals, that he knew what he was doing.
I saw Les Mis 3 times in the theater.
And here's the thing. Les Mis is very much a musical that is grounded in reality, so doing the whole, like, gritty realism thing with Les Mis, like, I see how he used that to trick us. And I'm not saying that Tom Hooper was, like, actively trying to trick us, of course, but, like,
I am. I'm saying
no,
that.
You're right. Tom Hooper is a malevolent entity, and he was trying to fool us all.
Unironically, I do think that he exists to hurt me.
He does. But it's easy to do Les Mis like that because it's good Oscar bait. It's very good Oscar bait. And Les Mis did win a few Oscars, one of which was for Anne Hathaway, who deserved it. Love you, Anne. Love her Fantine. She's a bright spot in the darkness of that movie. Anyway, so Cats was the worst possible musical you could give to Tom Hooper.
Correct. Correct.
Short of, like, Starlight Express. Because the thing about Cats that I think leads to a lot of people disliking Cats is that you need to approach Cats willing to vibe with it. It's very much a vibes-only musical. And it's difficult to vibe with Cats when it looks like a fucking horror show.
Okay, let's take a step back.
Wait, before we do this, can I just drop my hottest Cats take?
Oh, Jemmy, I would love to hear it.
My hottest Cats take is that if you want to do this, if you want to do a live-action Cats movie, nix the dancing. Get rid of the dancing. Do like a Lion King 2019 sort of deal. Make them cats. Because here's the thing. When you're in a theater and you're seeing a performance on stage, your mind is willing to suspend a lot more disbelief than it is when you're watching a movie, I feel like, and things are more allowed to be more abstract. So if you see a person on stage dancing in a cat-like way, dressed as a cat, like, I think you're more willing to be like, okay, yes, I get that this is supposed to be a cat, without hitting the uncanny valley aspect that Cats 2019 just dives right the fuck into. So just make them cats. Like, if you have to do this way, which, like, first of all, Cats was put on this earth to be an animated movie, so I don't know why. So I think this movie goes against God. This movie goes against God. Cats and the musical was put on this earth to be an animated movie, and the fact that it's not is, like, an aberration.
And it was supposed to be.
But if you have to do live action, just make them cats. Like, you can do it. It would be so easy to do. Just make them cats.
So, like, Amblimation was gonna make a Cats.
They were! Oh, the concept art for that looks so cool.
Steven Spielberg's animation studio Amblimation had planned a fucking hand-drawn animated Cats in the fucking 90s, and you know what? Maybe it would have been good, maybe it would have been bad, I don't know, the movie never got made, but it would have been better than this.
Oh, it would have been so much better than this. Have you seen the concept art? It's so good.
Like, these are the motherfuckers who made a fucking American Tale and Balto. Fucking Balto.
Balto. Staple of furries everywhere.
Like, can you imagine if the studio that made Balto had made a Cats?
It would have been so good.
It would have been so good. Beastly Kingdom Universe Lynchpin.
Oh, for sure.
Amblimation Cats.
Can I bring this? Can I just take this a step further? I think Cats 2019 is a glimpse into the Superstar Limo universe.
I agree. It's one of the few things that the Superstar Limo universe has in common with ours.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. So. God.
We need to actually start talking about the movie.
Okay. God, where to fucking start? There's so much to talk about this movie. Can we start? I want to start, okay, before we get into, like, ragging on this movie, can I just list the things that I like about it? Because there are things that I like about this
movie. There are things that I like about it, too. Okay, you can go first, and then I'll go, and then we'll talk about the things that we like.
I actually, like, starred things in my notes of, like, when I wrote, like, I like this. So I will go through my list. Number one, I love that they set the naming of Cats in a graveyard. I think that's really cool, and it makes me want a non-replica production of Cats that takes place in a graveyard, because
I love it too! It's so good!
Even though I have my issues with the naming of Cats, we'll get to that. I like Jason Derulo as Tugger. I think he's really fun. I think he's really fun, and I would love to see him on stage. I know that's not possible. I love
his energy! He's great! He's having a good time. His British accent is not awful.
He did what I like to call the John Partridge ritual, where a Tugger actor will stare into a mirror and be like, I will never be as good in this role as John Partridge. Because that's something you need to fundamentally understand when you play Rum Tum Tugger. Yeah. Also, of course, while we're talking about, like, actors that we like in this movie, Jennifer Hudson is fucking incredible, and I would kill to see her on stage as Grisabella.
Okay, I for real want, like, a stage production of Cats that has, like, Jason Derulo as Rum Tum Tugger, Fucking Jennifer Hudson is Grisabella. What's her name? The actress who played Victoria?
Francesca Hayward.
Hayward. I want her as Victoria.
I do too. You know why? Specifically? Because Victoria was a dream role of hers, even before the movie.
Like, just take... Oh, and Idris Elba is McCavity. I want him too.
Oh, God, please.
And Judi Dench, I want her. I want Ian McKellen. I want him there.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, just all of the actors in this that are good, I want to see them in a production of Cats that is not nightmarish and evil to look at.
Mm-hmm. Next one, hot take. I like this version of Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer. It's really grown on me.
No, I think it's I cannot agree with you on this. I hate this arrangement.
The arrangement's grown on me, and I think it's one of the more fun numbers in the movie. Sorry.
I like... Okay, I'm going to pull back and let you finish.
Yes. I like Gus and Mr. Mistopheles' relationship. I think that's really cute. I like Ian McKellen as Gus the theater cat is inspired casting. And of course.
He sells the shit out of his song.
And God, the shining beacon in this movie is Skimbleshanks the railway cat. We'll get into that, but I'll just say that here.
Stephen McRae is the other one who...
Oh, please.
...needs to play...
And that's it. That's all the things in this movie that I like.
I have a hot take.
Go.
The plot changes are good, actually.
I agree in terms of, like, Victoria as a character.
I like the Victoria stuff. I like the McCavity stuff a lot.
I don't like the McCavity
stuff. No. Okay.
Here's the thing about the counterpoint. Stuff.
Here's my counterpoint. Will you allow me to argue my side briefly?
Yes.
The reason that I feel like you don't like the McCavity stuff is because it leads to Rebel Wilson and James Corden being on screen more. If those characters were played by different actors, the McCavity stuff would be great.
Okay, here's my counterpoint. That is actually not why I don't like the McCavity stuff. Like the McCavity stuff. Okay, because like, if the McCavity stuff didn't happen, Rebel Wilson and James Corden would be more on screen more anyway, because they'd just be in the background like Jenny Anydots and, well, not Bustopher, but they'd just be in the background. Like, they'd still be there. The thing I don't like about the McCavity stuff is that it's just such a thinly veiled excuse for the A-listers to not be on screen. And when you realize that, you really see it, and you're like, oh, this is shoehorned.
Yes, but I think that it lends the movie a degree of plot that it needs because it's a movie. I understand that the reason why they did it is not great, but I respect it and I enjoy it. And I really like Victoria and I love her whole thing.
Okay, Victoria and Grisabella, I love it, but it frustrates me because it's done. I love what is at the core of Victoria and Grisabella's stuff. I really love what they're trying to do, but they're not doing it well.
No, they're not doing it well. But if you take the bones of what they tried to do and had more talented people writing this movie,
mm-hmm.
then it would be good.
Oh, for sure. I think one of the better changes you could make to Victoria would just be like, so the movie starts out with her being abandoned, but I think she should come into this movie already having been abandoned.
Agree.
I think having that happen so soon makes it very strange.
It's like you've literally been thrown out of a car in a pillowcase, and like now she's surrounded by these nightmare creatures being like, Jellicle songs for Jellicle cats. It's like, holy fucking shit. You feel like you've also just been thrown out of a moving car.
Here's the thing. Victoria is very clearly supposed to have like abandonment issues and like a really strong desire to be among these cats, and you just don't feel it with the story being the way it is. I see it because I have terminal writer brain and I'm like, oh, this could be good if this and that. It's just so frustrating because I love here. I have a whole note about this. Let me see if I can find it so I can just read it out loud, because I love the Grisabella and Victoria stuff or what it's trying to do so much.
It doesn't help that Beautiful Ghosts is a bad song.
Oh, Beautiful Ghosts blows ass.
It's such a terrible song. And, like, Autumn loved it. And, like, I watched it with my sister Autumn, by the way. And Autumn was like, oh, this is a great song. Like, I love Beautiful Ghosts. It slaps. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I will say, out of context, the Taylor Swift version is very pretty. But, unfortunately, in the movie, it blows ass.
That's what Autumn said. Autumn said the Taylor Swift version is better. And I listened to it over the credits, and I was like, okay, yeah, I can see... I could see that. But the song is terrible.
So, I enjoy... Here's what I wrote in my notes about Victoria and Grisabella. I love what they're trying to do here. I can see so clearly where it could have worked. The idea that Victoria sees her future in Grisabella as this cat who's been abandoned, like she sees herself there, and Grisabella sees herself in Victoria because Victoria is the cat that she was. The Jellicles learn to forgive her through Victoria's eyes, and it could have been so good, Taylor. It could have been so good.
Unfortunately, we live in maybe not the darkest timeline, but one of the darkest timelines.
Yeah, unfortunately, Tom Hooper fucking sucks at musicals. Can I say, while we're on this fucking... The decision to... I hope to God that we never get another fucking musical where they're singing live.
Okay.
Especially this
I was wondering if they were singing live. They were, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Oh, Taylor, you can hear. Like, if you listen for it, like, most of the actors who are dancing are fucking out of breath because they can't hit the notes they need to because they're dancing and singing and it's live.
Here's the wildest thing to me. Like, there's a reason why Victoria doesn't speak and, Mr. Mistopheles doesn't sing his own song.
Can we please talk about Misto while we're here? Can we please talk? I need to touch upon this.
I hate everything with Misto in this movie. And I don't care that I'm outing myself as, like a stan by, like, using, like, the fan nickname for him. I don't give a fuck. His name is Misto, and he's my son.
Even beyond the heterosexuality, which we'll get there.
Great.
We'll get there. But, okay, listen. Laurie Davidson did what he could do with the material. I understand. And I guess that's what Tom Hooper wanted. But I am so fucking baffled by the decision Tom Hooper made when he looked at the cast for this movie. He looked at the cast list, the cast of characters, and he was like, I'm going to take the most dance-heavy role in this show and cast someone who does not have a dancing background and cannot dance. And apparently the story of Tom Hooper casting Laurie Davidson is that Laurie Davidson sent in a really bad audition tape, and Tom Hooper saw it and was like, oh, what if I just made Mr. Mistopheles like this? What if I just made him awkward and...
That's so sad!
It's so awful! It's so awful! And like,
Laurie Davidson, I am so sorry.
I just can't get over how Tom Hooper not only, like, made this character the direct opposite of what he is in the show... but also decided to no-homo the shit out of his part? Like, for those of you not in the
know... Can we have a conversation about the changes that were made to the relationship between Mr. Mistopheles and Rum Tum Tugger? Because...
Okay, for those not in the know, in the show, Mr. Mistopheles... Misto's number. I'll fucking just use Misto. I don't fucking care.
Just say Misto. We've already outed ourselves as Cats fans.
Misto's song is sung... by Rum Tum Tugger, and it is strongly implied in multiple productions that these two have a little something going on. They're in love, and if you watch the more modern productions with the newer choreography, like, they have little dances throughout the whole show. They sing each other's songs. Well, Misto has like one line in Tugger's song, but like, they are very clearly, if not in love, then very, very close friends. And Tom Hooper was like, well, I can't have gays in my cats movie. You know, Cats, well known for being, the most heterosexual of musicals. He was like, no, you know what? I'm going to make Misto my romantic lead, and he's going to get together with Victoria.
And him and Rum Tum Tugger don't even, like, speak to each other or make eye contact. There is, like, one shot where they're in the same shot, and then, like, it cuts away, and then when it cuts back, Rum Tum Tugger is no longer in the shot.
It's so frustrating.
It's so intentional, too. You like, the thing is, like, if you know anything about the stage show, you can feel how intentional it is.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I want to lead this into something that I noticed kind of this time around, or that I have been noticing as I've watched this movie, which unfortunately I've seen it multiple times, which is great.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. Most of the times I've watched this movie, I have not been sober, so.
That's the only way to do it. Why do you think I did an edible last night?
Exactly. So, in the stage musical, and like, I usually, when it comes to adaptations, I like to let things stand on their own. I don't like to judge them, but like, fuck that. Fuck that here, because the stage musical is so much better in all aspects, and it's so difficult to not compare the two. In the stage musical, there is very much a sense of, like, community among the cats. Like, everyone is kind of on stage all the time. Like, I think the only character that is not around all the time is Grisabella. And, like, Gus. And
yeah, Buster. I was gonna say Gus.
Yeah, there are a few, but, like, for the most part, the entire cast is on stage all the time, and when you watch, like, productions, you'll see some of the actors, like, just kind of having little character interactions in the background, and it's really fun. And it's just, every character kind of has their own personality. Because
you can always tell in productions of Cats that all of the actors have done a lot of character work and have extensively established, like, and it varies from production to production, of course, mm-hmm. within reason. Obviously, there are some things that are, like, in the text and can't be changed, but, like, within reason, it's like, oh, there are some productions where, like, Monkey Strap and Jenny Anydots have, like, a mother-son friendship sort of going on. Mm-hmm. And, like, you can very much tell that that is something that the actors have spoken about on their own terms and, like, developed. And, like, background cats who you can clearly tell have, like, established relationships. Like, I'm friends with this cat, I'm this cat's lover, like, etc. Like, they all have very specific relationships with every other cat on stage. And in the movie, you just do not get that.
You don't get that. And I realized, I'm like, oh, it's because a lot of the time they're not singing each other's songs because all the A-listers, of course, want their solos. Like, let's talk about the Gumby Cat, Taylor.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Gumby Cat while we're here.
We can't really dance around this anymore. Rebel Wilson is...
No, please. I'm using the Gumby Cat as an example here, and we will get into specifics of the Gumby Cat song because it is why we're talking about it on this podcast right now. In the show, the Gumby Cat song is sung by Monkey Strap as it is in the movie, but also by, like, a trio of, like, lady cats doing the choruses. Like, Jenny
and
Dots,
I think
she does.
I mean, I think it's Jelly, it's Jelly Lorem, Demeter, and mm-hmm. Bomb Ballerina.
Mm-hmm. And Jenny Anydots actually doesn't sing a lot of her own song. Like, she has a line or two here, but it's mostly, like, the other cat singing it. And for the most part, that is kind of par for the course. Like, the only cats that I can think of that actually, like, sing their own songs, I think, are, like, Tugger, Skimble.
That's it.
That's it, kind of. Like, everyone else has someone sing their song. You know, Jenny Anydots sings Buster for Jones. Jelly Lorem sings Gus the Theater Cat. Rum Tum Tugger sings Mr. Mistopheles. Like, they all sing each other's songs, and you get that sense of, like, love amongst them and community. And, like, these are a bunch of cats that all love each other and are a big found family. And you don't get that in the movie because all the A-listers want to have their solos, and, like, that's understandable, I guess, but also you lose a lot of what makes cats charming. And it's really noticeable when you know.
Can we talk specifically about the Gumby Cat song?
Yes, please? We can. That's why we're featuring this movie on our podcast at all, because it is a horror show.
It's a horror show.
And the worst part is that, like, it's the first, like cat song that we get. Like, because we get Jellicle Songs for Jellicle Cats, which is the opening number. The Naming of Cats. which, can I just really, I have a really, before we get into the Gumby Cat song, I have a really quick comment to make about the naming of cats, because it's so funny to me every time I watch this movie. So in the naming of cats, they're talking about, like, again, you know, cats and their three names that they have as part of the lore TM. It's based on a poem by T.S. Eliot. It's just, it's kind of nonsensical, but it's cats, so you kind of just go along with it. But the funniest thing about it to me is that they cut the line with Munkustrap's name. So throughout the entire movie, you have an entire main character and you don't know his name unless you're like a Cats fan and you know who Munkustrap is beforehand. And it is so funny to me. Like, he's a main character. He's one of our leads. And can I just say, Robbie Fairchild is putting, if you'll pardon the pun, his whole pussy into this movie.
So many of the actors are putting their whole pussy into it. Okay, I cannot wait any longer.
Okay, guys, Gummy Cat.
Speaking of pussy, we need to talk about Rebel Wilson scratching her crotch. We need to talk about the little mice with the human faces. We have to talk about the cockroaches.
Oh my god.
We have to talk about the skin unzipping.
Ah! Okay, can we, let's just go through this number, shall we? Let's just go through.
I would prefer not to.
Well, we have to. Just what the Academy wants, shots of Rebel Wilson scratching her crotch.
You know what?
You know what people like in this day and age? Fat jokes.
Oh, and boy does this movie have a lot of those.
You know what Cats the Musical really needed? Fat jokes.
Fat jokes! Okay, I have a gripe with the Bustopher Jones song.
Can I say something really quick about the Gumby Cat song? I never noticed how bad the CGI on all the collars is. And, like, obviously,
HD did not do this movie any favors for me.
And, again, not the fault of the animators. They were all, like, crunched for time, and Universal slashed their funding. Like, I get it, but also, it's very funny. Rebel Wilson's collar at one point just fully clips through her neck. It's insane. While we're having gripes with the bust of her number, let me just ask, why the fuck is it lit like a fucking Saw movie?
Why is this whole movie lit the way that it is? Okay, so, like, Bustopher Jones. The whole thing with the Bustopher Jones song in the musical is that the joke is that he, like, goes around to all these different, like, fancy people clubs, and all the patrons at the clubs feed him fancy people food, and so he's really fat.
It's
but he's, like,
cute.
Fat, and he's, like, fancy. He's, like, a fancy fat cat. They say he's the, you know, in the fucking movie, they say he wears little white spats. Like, he's a fancy little guy.
Yeah, the joke in the musical is not that he's fat, per se. They're not, like, making pratfall jokes or anything.
No, they're not making fun of him for being fat. Being fat is just a consequence of him being fed by fancy people.
And they're all kind of, like, envious, because,
yeah,
of course
everyone
they're fat.
Really excited about the fact that he's fat, because, like, some of the cats are street cats, and, like, they don't get a lot of food, and so, like, the fact that he gets to be fat while also being a street cat is kind of, like, a cool thing for the other cats.
Exactly.
They're like, oh, you live on the street, but you also eat enough that you're able to get fat. Like, that's really cool. And, like, you know, he has these little flirty moments with some of the older lady cats. It's kind of cute. They're kind of swooning over him. It's adorable. And in the movie, they were like, God, fat people are so gross. They eat out of the garbage. As if that is not literally the opposite of the thing that the lyrics of the song are telling us about Bustopher Jones. I'm sorry, I know that this is such a small thing to get hung up on in the grand scheme of the nightmare that is Cats 2019, but I cannot abide by the fact that, like, it feels like the people who staged this number just didn't listen to the lyrics of the song. It is the opposite of the song.
Tom Hooper has never seen a production of Cats in his
life.
He's
a fancy cat! He eats fancy people food!
I will stand by my fucking conspiracy theory that Tom Hooper has never seen a production of Cats. He listened to the London cast once, and then never again. This man has no idea how this musical functions. It's so bad.
Can we chat about Idris Elba for a moment?
Yes. Oh my god. Okay,
number one, he is doing the most. Number two, he is sexy as hell, and I'm not gonna apologize for that. Number three, he looks so naked.
Good grief, he's naked.
Good grief, he's naked. Oh, he's so naked.
It's
just the way that he takes the coat off. Why would you put him in a coat and then have him then take the coat off? Because
here's the thing, McCavity with the coat is actually like one of the better designs in this movie.
Looks cool as fuck.
All the cats who have like clothes look good, look pretty good. Like obviously there's still nightmarish human hands and feet and such, but they like when you see the cats with clothes, and I'm talking like Grisabella, Old Deuteronomy, Skimbleshanks, Gus, and McCavity, who all have clothes on or like a coat thing, or like they look. Oh, and Tugger at the beginning, like you see where
Misto also has clothes, but they're bad.
Yeah, they're bad. Well, actually, no. Misto's little jacket is cute. I will say that, but like, I can't get over Misto like in general in this movie, so he doesn't get a pass. But
why would you take the trouble of establishing that some cats wear clothes and then just take the clothes off of them? Because
why would you do that? The
reaction is literally just going to be good grief, he's naked.
Why would you do that and then have a bunch of unclothed cats running around? Like, I feel like this movie almost could have worked if, like, the cats had been, had had, like, little costumes. Like, you know what I mean? I could have probably, like, abided that.
The weirdest thing was the two cats who have a little dance break, and they have just, like, Converse sneakers.
They have sneakers! Why do they have sneakers? Also, like, oh, fuck, what was I gonna say? I can't remember.
Cats ruined your brain.
Cats ruined my brain. In more ways than one.
Fuck this movie. Honestly, like,
can we talk about something? Okay, can we talk about something else that's good, though?
Yeah, I guess. What else is there?
I mean, can we talk about Skimbleshanks?
Fuck! Yes, we fucking
can. Can we talk about Skimbleshanks? Like, one of the...
I'm gonna interrupt you because I have something so important to say.
Yeah.
I hit, like, the peak of the edible experience during Skimbleshanks. And when I tell you I was fucking vibing so hard...
Did you see God?
I was bouncing. I was, like, bouncing up and down. I was singing. Autumn had fallen asleep by that point.
Did you see God, Taylor?
I saw God, and his name was Skimbleshanks, the railway cat. The cat of the railway train.
Here's the thing. Skimbleshanks is, like, already one of the show's biggest bangers, because the show does this thing.
It's my personal favorite song in the show.
It's throughout the... Okay, there are some bangers in Act 1, and there are some bangers in Act 2. But Act 2 throws the show's, like, three biggest bangers at you in quick succession. It gives you Skimbleshanks, it gives you McCavity, it gives you Mr. Mistopheles. Like, the three biggest ragers in this entire musical, one after the other. And then you get hit with Memory. Like, it's beautiful. And we'll get to talking about Mr. Song in this, because I have more complaints. But, like, Skimbleshanks in this movie... is so fucking good. And one of the reasons it's good is because, like, so the music in this movie is very weird, not only because they're singing live, but because Tom Hooper does this weird fucking thing where he records the actors live on stage, or not on stage, on set, and then he gives that to an orchestra, and the orchestra is kind of forced to, like, play along to the way that the actors sang the music. And because it's singing live and Tom Hooper likes to do that weird thing where, like, he wants it realistic, the songs aren't always on the beats that they are in the sheet music. And if you want to know more about this, I highly, 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 highly recommend the video Why the Music in Cats 2019 is Terrible or something like that by Sideways on YouTube. Very good. I used that a lot when compiling my thoughts about this movie. But Skimbleshanks is a tap number, so it has to be on the beat because you have the tap going on. And that's why I think it sounds the best out of all of these numbers, because you have everyone dancing on a beat together and singing on a beat. Tom, it's not hard! Tom, it's not hard!
I also just really like the thing of the the tap dancing being made to sound like a train.
Oh, it's so good. That's once you really realize, good,
and I hope that more productions incorporate that.
Oh, that'd be so good on stage.
That would be so cool to see on stage. The thing about this movie is that it just exists to tantalize you with like small good things, and then boom, fucking vibe check you. Visible Judi Dench wedding ring.
And another thing about Skimble Shanks is that the energy of the song is never interrupted because Tom Hooper is so self-conscious about the fact that he's making a musical that he has to, like, cut away from the songs and do, like, I don't fucking know, Rebel Wilson slapstick or, like, some aside to the song. It's like, no, Tom, just let it keep going. Just let it be a musical. You can tell this in Tugger's Number. Like, there are so many, because Tugger's Number is one of, like, the more higher energy ones in the show. Like,
it's also very good.
It's very good. It's a rager. But, like, Tom Hooper keeps cutting away to, like, Robbie Fairchild and Rebel Wilson doing improv slapstick. And it's like, so why, stupid. Tom? This is one of the better, like, one of the best songs in the musical. Why do you keep interrupting it? And don't even get me fucking started on how he butchers Mr. Mistopheles. God. So,
we discussed how this movie no homos the shit out of Rum Tum Tugger and Mr. Mistopheles. And so in the stage musical, which is a sentence that we've said 100 times, in the stage musical, Rum Tum Tugger sings the song about his husband, Mr. Mistopheles, right? And you're like, oh, this is wonderful. And then Mr. Mistopheles comes out and he's like, I'm the fucking best. And my husband is here to tell you all about how I'm the best. And in the movie, they make it into like a fucking, they were like, we need to fit a character arc into the song. So the song starts out with Mr. Mistopheles being like, oh, I don't think I can do it. And then he fucking sings the song himself. And it's like over the course of the song, oh, he like gains the courage to do magic or whatever. And it's like, I understand how, from a writing perspective, you could be like, this is more dynamic and therefore more interesting. But it is more boring because it's more conventional.
Here's the thing. No homoing takes away from how you could have made this number work and had the character arc too. I've seen this discussed a lot because I was a member of the Cats fandom. The ideal way to do this character arc and this whole thing is to kind of have Misto be like a background character and throw some hints as to like, yeah, like maybe he's magic. Maybe like he has some confidence issues or something like that. Old Deuteronomy gets kidnapped. Everyone is like, oh shit, what do we do? Rum Tum Tugger steps up and is like, hey, my boyfriend's magic and I'm going to sing about how great he is to boost his confidence so that we can get this shit done. And it works. And we don't have to turn Mr. Mistopheles, the song, into a fucking dirge that goes for way too long and keeps starting and stopping because
it's
Tom Hooper.
So bad.
Tom Hooper thinks he's like teasing us with one of the more well-known numbers in the musical. And it's like, no, Tom, you're just making it worse. You're just making it a worse song.
I was this zoning out rules so hard during that number.
It's so frustrating. It's just,
this is a frustrating movie.
Let's talk about another good thing. Let's talk about Jennifer Hudson.
I love her.
She's so good in this. Like, even through, like, Tom Hooper deciding he needs her face, like, covered in snot because
I hated that.
Because, look, he did it with Anne Hathaway in Les Mis, and it got him an Oscar, so
you know what? Okay, fuck you. It kind of makes sense in Les Mis, at least, because, it like,
does.
The whole tone is very gritty, and it's like, Fantine is at her lowest point, and, like, you
I'm not dunking on Les Mis! I'm not dunking on Les Mis!
No,
I'm
no,
dunking
no, no,
on
but
the
I, listen, so, like, you've moved the song from a point in the show, I'm not arguing with you, I'm arguing with Tom Hooper. You've moved the song from a point in the show to the point where Fantine is at her lowest emotionally and physically, for that matter. She is, like, on the verge of death. And she's like, fuck, my life is awful. And the tone of Les Mis, the movie, is so gritty that it makes sense for it to go there in terms of, like, the unbroken shot, the snot, the fucking whatever, the spit every, you know, fucking whatever. Anne Hathaway's dry-ass lips. Like, with Cats is fantastical and magical, and it's like you know, you can have potent emotionality and melodrama without grittiness. And I think that that's something that Tom Hooper doesn't understand as a director, is that a movie does not need to be grounded in any kind of visual reality for an emotional moment to hit really hard.
Tom Hooper said in an interview about this movie that he wanted it to be very grounded in reality. And that, listeners, is why this was the worst possible musical to give to Tom Hooper. So normal. Anyway, Memory was just Tom Hooper going, I did it once, I can do it again, and he was fucking wrong.
He was wrong.
But Jennifer Hudson sells it to the back rows, and she's amazing, and I want to see her as a stage Grisabella so bad.
Can you imagine her in the stage Grisabella costume?
Oh, God.
I would kill for it. I want it in the worst way.
Please. So anyway, this movie has the same plot as Midsommar, actually.
I hate you so much.
You hate me because I'm right.
Why do I do this podcast with you?
This podcast was your idea, Taylor. You tell me. Also, while we're talking about Tom Hooper doing the no homo thing, like, he also did it with Demeter and Bomb Ballerina.
Yeah, why did you do that?
Demeter barely exists in this movie. She's a background character. You don't know her name. She actually looks more like stage Victoria than real Victoria, which is very funny to me. And Bomb Ballerina, as Taylor's wonderfully written notes say, is kind of like McCavity's Harley Quinn. And obviously, I know they did it because, like, Taylor Swift isn't going to be singing a duet with anyone if she's in a show. Can I just say really quick, my favorite thing about, like, Taylor Swift in this movie is that, famously, Tom Hooper did not cast her as Eponine in Les Mis, and this was her consolation prize, was that he cast her as Bomb Ballerina without an audition.
Honestly?
I think that's very funny. Anyway, in the stage show, as we've said a million times, Demeter and Bomb Ballerina sing McCavity, and it's very much like we hate our ex-boyfriend who sucks. But, you know.
Yeah, it's cool. It's the vibe is really fun because it's like, we're dating now, and we've both dated this shitty, awful guy in the past. But we're both still kind of a little horny for him.
It's really funny because, like, the lyrics of McCavity are kind of, like, dragging him.
Yeah.
But the way Bomb Ballerina sings it in the movie is very, like, villain song braggy, which is hysterical because she's saying things like, his coat is dusty from neglect. Like, yeah, man. This is supposed to be a drag. Like, you know that.
It's not, though.
I do think the staging of McCavity in this movie is very cool, though.
I could have been good in a better movie.
Yep. I do like Bomb Ballerina, like, arriving on the big moon that comes in. I think that's cool.
I like the McCavity subplot. I like the fucking catnip shit. I don't know. I just think it's fun.
It's, again, one of those numbers where, like, the energy doesn't get interrupted, so you just get the song. Like, it's in a better film.
So,
although Taylor Swift's British accent is not the best.
She was doing a British accent?
Oh, Taylor, she sure was.
I'm not like kidding or anything. Like, she was singing?
Yes. Listen to it again. She's trying to do a British accent, and it's not very good. Sorry, ooh, Taylor.
No.
You tried, Miss Swift. You tried.
One thing that I will say, because, Jemmy, unless you have anything kind of else to say, do you?
I have one more no homo thing to say.
Okay, I would love to hear
one more. And it's about something completely different than Demeter and Bomb Ballerina and Tugger and Misto. They changed a lyric in Old Deuteronomy.
Yes! Oh, God! Thank you for bringing this up.
So the original poem reads, Old Deuteronomy's buried 9 wives, and more, I am tempted to say, 99. And that's the lyric in the show. But because the character of Old Deuteronomy was originally male, but it's Judi Dench here, so they gender bent? Is that going to get me canceled if I say that?
No, I don't think so. I think that's the generally accepted term.
Okay, yeah, they gender bent Old Deuteronomy to be Judi Dench, which is very sweet because Judi Dench was originally supposed to play Grisabella in the stage show and got injured. So they made her Old Deuteronomy, and I think that's kind of sweet. But the line in the movie is, I think Old Deuteronomy's lived many lives, and let Old Deuteronomy me be a lesbian, you cowards. She and Grisabella are exes. Anyway.
See, the thing about old Deuteronomy and Grisabella is that they're exes in, like, every version of the show, including this one.
Yep.
She left him for, like, to go be, like, a star.
A star, yeah.
Also, okay, no. Actually, I'm gonna drag this on for a little while longer. Can we talk about the Grisabella added backstory?
Oh, it's so dumb. It's so dumb! We don't need a backstory for... We don't... That's the thing, because, like, in the show... Grisabella arrives on stage and, like, everyone hates her. And you get the impression very quickly that she is just, like, an outcast. And you don't need to know why, really, because, again, Cats is a musical that runs on vibes, and you just kind of accept it like she's an outcast for XYZ reason. The movie decides, like, oh, wait, actually we need a reason. So they just, like, throw in a line about how she, quote-unquote, went with McCavity. No details as to what that meant or what that entails.
Or, God, like, what her experience was, why she is no longer currently working with him. Was she his fucking Harley Quinn at one point, and then he, like, I don't know, like, kicked her to the curb for a younger woman or something?
Like, it just, it's, they thought that it would make more sense, but you just opened up a million more questions. And that's what this movie does, is that it tries to make sense of Cats, and, like, this musical runs on vibes. Like, you... Trying to make things make more sense than they do only opens up new questions and new avenues, and it doesn't make it any less confusing for an audience that is maybe seeing Cats for the first time, or maybe this is their first exposure, or, God, even if you've seen Cats before. Like, it doesn't make sense. And trying to make more sense of it doesn't work. This was such a bad musical to make a conventional movie out of, you know? And I love Cats, but in order to make it work, you have to go more abstract with it. And Tom Hooper is just physically incapable of doing that.
So, like, my thing with Cats is that, like, I feel like in order to make a movie out of Cats, what you need to do is to basically do, like, to do a Chicago. Do you know what I mean? Like,
no, elaborate on that.
Like, okay, so, like, I, like, have the musical numbers clearly delineate themselves from reality in a way. If, and this is just me pitching a movie that is never going to be made, but, like, my ideal version of Cats would be an animated movie, like, hand-drawn, but it would be, like, the movie would basically start out with the cats as, like, conventional, like, on all four legs fucking cats. And then, like, the Jellicle Songs for Jellicle Cats starts playing, and they all leave their homes, they go to the fucking graveyard or wherever, like, and into the streets, and then they become the anthropomorphic people cats, still hand-drawn, and then the moon comes out and they start doing their thing, and then the movie, the Cats happens.
Yeah.
That would make so much more sense, and, like, because you have to clearly... communicate to the audience that you are entering a weird world where weird shit is gonna happen and you just need to fucking go with it. There needs to be, like, Chicago, like, in the movie Chicago, there is a clear delineation between the musical numbers, which exist in a fantasy world, and the more conventional rest of the movie, which is filmed like a normal ass movie from 2006. That's how to make an audience, like, be able to wrap their head around a strange, not even a strange, just, like, a musical in general. You can't try to ground a musical in reality. You can't do it. It's a musical. It's a fucking musical. Sorry, I'm just, God, I'm fired up, guys.
Listeners, if you take away one thing from this episode, Cats, the musical, was put on this earth to be an animated movie. And the fact that it is not is a sin against God.
Remember what they took from you. That is all. You want to read some Letterboxd reviews?
I cannot wait to see the Letterboxd reviews. Please. Okay.
So, Sophie says, me before Cats. No other movie this year can disturb and upset me more than Midsommar did. Me after Cats. Oh no.
One again, star. same plot.
Daniel says, I am going to break into Tom Hooper's house and I am going to milkboard Tom Hooper. Half a star.
I'll come with you. That man deserves to pay for his crimes.
He's my enemy. Chris Evangelista says, a deeply cursed and deeply horny movie, 5 stars. Diamond Bolt says, this is a hate crime against the entire human race, 0.5 star.
Very true, yes.
Christy says, this is both the cinematic equivalent of gender dysphoria and the cinematic equivalent of gender euphoria at the same time. Monumental, terrifying, this is Freddy Got Fingered and this is Inland Empire. Fuck. 5 stars. Christy went on a fucking journey during the events of Cats 2019.
Good for her.
I hope they're doing okay. Sarah says, I never wanted to commit an act of violence against another being so strongly as I want to brutally attack Cat James Corden.
God, yeah. I remember watching and like, Bustopher enters the movie with like a fake out ominous entrance and like it started and I was just like, oh fuck, not this again. Don't make me watch it again. I've seen it so often.
It was really funny because like we got about halfway through Bustopher Jones's song and Autumn just quietly went, he should be embarrassed.
He should be embarrassed. James Corden and Rebel Wilson should be fucking embarrassed for this shit.
And I have never seen anybody take him down so succinctly and yet so mercilessly. Like, yeah, Autumn, incredible. He should be fucking embarrassed.
You're so correct, Autumn.
Jordan says, I never thought I would ever say this, but Jason Derulo outsold. 3.5 stars.
He did, though.
I'm glad that there is someone besides me who thinks that Jason Derulo was a very good Rum Tum Tugger. Like, he's pretty good.
Jason Derulo,
I'm not mad at it.
He understood the assignment.
He didn't understand the assignment. Because that was, like, I feel like when the casting of this movie was announced and Jason Derulo as Rum Tum Tugger was one of the things I was kind of like, oh god, are you kidding me? But like, he was really good.
See, the thing is, in interviews, Jason Derulo is like super into being in Cats. Like, he is like jazzed to be in Cats. And I love that. Oh shit. Sorry, that was the
Wobble
lid of my water
says,
bottle.
I'm going to kill myself. 0.5 star. Sometimes that's how I feel after watching this movie too.
Yeah.
This person whose name is just The Mummy 1999 fan.
Love it.
Correct and true of you to say so, bestie.
Mm-hmm.
Their review is simply, they did it. Did what? Not sure, but they did it. 2 stars.
They sure did.
This person just says, I had 3 half erections throughout this film. No joke. 5 stars.
Andrew Lightweber would be so thrilled. He actually hates this movie. Did you know that?
I do know that he hates it, which is hilarious to me.
Hilarious
you,
and fair.
You wrote Cinderella, like...
Yes, sir. You wrote Love Never Dies.
You wrote Love Never Dies, and you think you're better than this movie. Fuck you, Andy.
You're the reason that, like, the theater world is stuck eternally trying to make Love Never Dies work. It'll never work, Lord Andy. It will never fucking work. But also, like, Tom Hooper's Love Never Dies win.
Did you ever know of the story of one of Lord Andy's cats, like,
yes,
walked on his keyboard and deleted the entirety of the score he had written for Love Never Dies? Like, that, honestly, that cat was a Jellicle cat, and that cat was doing what it needed to do.
That cat saved us.
It didn't, though, because then he just rewrote it.
It was trying to save us. Now,
that
that
cat was
an effort.
By old Deuteronomy to fix things.
Do you think we'd be living in a brighter timeline if that cat had, like, succeeded?
100%.
Yeah.
I think that by now we would have been living in the Beastly Kingdom timeline if that cat had managed to successfully delete all of Lord Andy's Love Never Dies score.
That's true.
Anyway, Zara says, saw Skimbleshanks the Railway Cat. Effervescent. 5 stars.
Truly, though. Truly.
And finally, Renee B. has what I think might be the funniest review of this movie I've ever seen, which is, it's just the sort of thing that makes you want to start a suicide cult. 1 star and a heart.
Oh, the heart makes it.
The heart makes it. Like, yeah.
I'm going to make a controversial statement regarding my star rating of this movie.
I'm so afraid of what you're about to say.
I refuse to give this movie a rating.
I was also going to say that I can't give it any stars because it's just,
Here's the thing. Cats 2019 shouldn't exist.
It's true.
This movie shouldn't exist. There is no audience for this movie. Even a good Cats movie would be such a difficult sell to, like, pitch to a studio. This movie defies its own existence. And as much as I have, like, everything that I dislike about this movie, I have to respect it for existing. I watched this movie in a state of awe. Just like, how could anyone let this happen? And I can't rate it like I would a normal movie.
Yeah.
No stars. No anything. Just cats.
Just cats.
Just Hal, it's about cats.
You know what? Actually, here's my review of this movie. My review of this movie is simply meow.
Meow.
That's all you can say.
Thank you for putting up with us, listeners.
Babes, we've been doing this podcast for a year.
This is our anniversary episode. We were supposed to do Van Helsing for our anniversary episode, but
no.
It coincided with our plans to do this, and this was more important. So, we return to reality next time. We will be watching 2021's Halloween Kills with a guest star, my brother Jamie, my other brother. This will be less a viewing of the film or a review of the film than it will be a therapy session for my brother.
Correct.
But it's almost his birthday, and I promised him this. So, Halloween Kills.
And it does.
Oh, fuck, dude. It sure does.
We really like you guys, and we're really happy that you guys, some of you have been around here since the beginning, and we're very grateful for those people.
But we're also grateful for the newbies.
Yes, we're grateful for everyone.
All right, well, you can follow us at FGFpod on Twitter, Instagram, and now TikTok. Taylor did it, everyone.
We did it!
We have a TikTok.
We do have a TikTok.
And yeah, we'll see you guys next time for Halloween Kills. Bye, guys.
Bye.